Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're asking, can you outrun aging? Ooh.
Hope so.
Yeah, here's the hoping, eh? Here's the, we've got Sam Murphy coming on talking about it. So I hope she's going to say yes, absolutely, guys. 120-minute one.
All that running you've been doing, perfect. You're now forever young. I hope so, because I've had to start using an eye cream because I looked in the mirror the other day and it was terrifying. So now I'm using an eye cream. And on the eye cream, it says it's recapturing my youth to some capacity. So I don't know how it's doing it, but I'm using it because it's not looking good, guys.
Wow. That's it. That's an interesting one. Because Jane, your dad is a lifelong runner, isn't he? Do you think has it kept him young?
I mean, well, I don't want to delve too deep in case they listen to this. I don't think they do. But my mum has drilled in the fact that you have to wear sun cream every day or you'll get wrinkles from probably when I was about 10. So I think if she'd like that with me, she'd probably like that with my dad. So he's got quite good skin, actually. I think that's down to the old the SPF, but it could be down to the running.
Hey, we're going to find out. Interesting article in the Times, I think out today. It's Nike has shelved a super shoe for sprinters after rival manufacturers expressed fears that they would allow an inferior athlete to wipe out Usain Bolt's world record. So this is the Vaporfly that I think you saw in New York, Jane, but I don't think it's been out in competition. Yeah.
Yeah. I was in New York about this time last year when they launched the Alphafly. And it kind of looked crazy if I'm thinking of the same shoe. It kind of had the same like little air pocket thing under your forefoot. But it kind of looked like it was hovering. Like, do you know what I mean? The way they'd like it, I was like, wow, that's a crazy hovering spike shoe. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like surely the same could be said for the Alphafly, that they're going to make people quicker.
100%, Jane. That's exactly it. Why is Usain Bolt's record so important? Why? What happened? What about Paula Radcliffe's?
Yeah.
Or...
So is it literally have Puma said, right, as in when we talk about a rival manufacturer? I haven't read it, so I'm just going by what you guys know on this topic. But because it says rival manufacturers, so I'm assuming it's. But why specifically Usain Bolt?
I guess it's because he's the poster boy of 100 meters sprinting, and his records would probably be broken by someone who somebody decides is an inferior athlete, which again is a sort of weird judgment call that I'm not sure is easy to make. But as Jamie was saying, records have been getting broken left, right, and centre now for 18 months, 2 years in distance running events. You can decide whether that's right or wrong. But I think once you allow that to happen on certain events, you can't sort of ring fence 100 metres and say, no, these records were set by Mr. Usain Bolt. So we can't have technology coming in helping here. It's almost too late, isn't it? The horse has bolted with this stuff, I think.
I just also think if you apply it to other sports, it'd be like, I mean, don't get me started on F1. I don't think it's a sport, but like, oh, you can't drive a new car because like 10 years ago we didn't have that kind of car, or you can't play with a new tennis racket because technology, like, are we just going to stay in this in 2020 forever? Because no one wants that. Like, do you know what I mean? Can we not develop any further from now in case other things, like, it's just stupid. And I think it's insulting on athletes to be like, oh, you did it because your shoes, not because we know more about recovery or we know more about training and stuff now. No one can be better than Bolt, so it must be your shoes. I've no shade on Bolt, like, who knows? But like, I don't know. I think it's ridiculous.
Do you think that maybe it's because margins within 100 meters are so small that the impact. But then it doesn't really matter, does it? I was trying to sort of reason and logic around this and be like, oh, well, the margins in the 100 meters are so much smaller that the, you know, 1 second advantage, or in 1 second, that's insane. The
1% would be a difference, yeah.
The 200, do the 200, whatever, milliseconds of time, you know, that these shoes bring, that's a huge difference. So I guess that's kind of like where it comes from, but still.
You just can't have one rule for distance running, one rule for sprinting. Like if you wanted to say like these shoes, so like, now, I was in favor of this, Ben. No, I'm not saying that I've been proven right here, but like, you know, like, it's like you could make a rule and say no carbon plates in shoes, right? That's it. No carbon plates in shoes. Any record set with that isn't a record. And you could just ban them. Mm. That could happen. But they haven't done that. So you can't now go, oh no, but not in 100 meters. It's just mad. Yeah, I think it just does a massive disservice to all the other distances or other athletes.
Agreed.
Yeah. When I spoke to Tony Bignall, I might have said his name wrong, who is, I think he's VP of footwear innovation at Nike in New York. And we were talking mainly about the Alphafly, but I guess it applies here. And I kind of said to him, you know, whenever you release anything new or exciting or new technology, everyone's immediately like, we gotta ban it. And I was like, how does that feel as someone who's a designer? Like, do you know what I mean? You've spent years working on this shoe. And he said, in a way, it's flattering because people are so intimidated by new technology and new developments that it's just other brands being worried, I guess, that Nike or Adidas are ahead of them. And I wonder if that's what's happened here. Maybe they are these weird kind of hovering, floaty shoes that no other brand have developed. And they're just like, oh, no, you can't. But it's weird for Nike to pull them. I don't know. But maybe they've just had so much ag.
Yeah, I agree. I've that's it, isn't it? Because Ben was saying, but Bolt was a Puma athlete, right? So why would Nike pull a shoe to preserve the legacy of a Puma athlete? Yeah, it seems a bit like, that's very good of you guys.
Unless they don't meet some sort of regulation. I don't know. I've not looked into it enough. But I guess they are an elite. We're talking elite shoes here, aren't we? They're not for the everyday.
Oh, yeah. You're not going out and doing like a little jog in a 3 mile around the park in them. No. They're spikes, aren't they? They're spikes. So, you're like, you know, they're a track spike. Yeah.
But yeah. Weird.
This is a very, very strange one.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, well, I wonder what our listeners think about that. Do you think that some of these distances should be ring-fenced and protected, or is it too late?
Yeah, I feel like we've been very one-sided. I'd like to hear a different point of view, because maybe I'm being ignorant.
Usain Bolt, are you listening? Would you like to write in podcast@runnersworld.co.uk? Look forward to hearing from you.
Too busy launching a music career, Rick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, international music star. You know,
I'm quite excited about that.
Maybe he'll sort of launch some sort of protest song, and that's how we'll keep up to date with this burning topic. Should we get our guest of the week on?
Let's do it. Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown. The passing years have consequences beyond the number of candles on our cake. We lose muscle. We become less flexible. Our VO2 max decreases, but can running help to slow or even reverse the aging process? The evergreen Sam Murphy is here on the Runner's World podcast to tell us more. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, hello, Rick. Thanks for that. Evergreen. I love that.
I guess some under 40s will be listening to this and maybe thinking, yeah, I've got nothing to worry about. I'm still young. I'm in my prime. But some of these changes, these kind of aging process, actually happen a lot earlier than people might like. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those people who are thinking, well, I might just download this and listen to it in 10 years, have got to sort of take a second look. Yeah, a lot of these changes are happening from a lot younger than 40. I mean, you know, right from sort of 30, even some of them are from kind of late 20s. So
yeah.
Bone density, lung capacity, VO2 max, so aerobic capacity, muscle mass, all of those things are already starting to decline from sort of 30 years of age onwards. So it isn't something that only starts to affect us when we're sort of 40 or 50.
Cool. So Jane's all right for a bit, but me and Ben, we're in serious trouble, mate.
Well, you did say like some under 40s listening might be thinking there's nothing to worry about. I'm the opposite. I think that the decline has begun in earnest, and I do worry about it quite a lot.
Well, that's good. Well, this would be a good episode for you to take in, Ben.
Yeah. Good.
I think one of the most revelatory quotes that that somebody said to me when I was researching the article for Runner's World on aging was, it's not so much that exercise slows down the aging process as that not exercising accelerates it.
Mm, right.
And I think that's a really good take on it. So it's, you know, just turning it on its head, really, and saying that actually it's more about lifestyle. It's about what we're doing with our years rather than the chronological sort of passing of time. So, you know, other things in your life that prevent you from exercising, whether that's, yeah, sort of sheer laziness, or whether it's just being completely, you know, engulfed in other things that are taking over, like being a dad to two young kids,
yeah.
might stop you exercising as much as you were. And those declines are just kind of waiting in the wings, really.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. The decline is here. It's not even waiting in the wings anymore. But do you think there's anything we can do to slow the march of old father time? Or is it just that when that's not really the point? The point is that you're doing your best to sort of just delay it, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I mean, the studies show two things, that the declines happen at a slower rate in people who are active, you know, sort of regularly active. So the declines happen slower, but also they begin later in lots of cases too. So there's two different ways that you're kind of slowing the march of time. But I think what's really interesting about the research that's been done is that when these declines were first attributed to the aging process, things like bone density decreasing and weight gain happening, aerobic capacity, all of those things. The reason is that they were comparing what they considered to be sort of normal people who were aging with younger people, but their version of normal was basically sedentary, inactive people. And it was only when they started to look at people who they considered to be unusual, people who hadn't just, you know, become confined to the sofa from the age of 40, people who were still active, when they started to look at those people in comparison to younger people, they found that actually the declines were much, much smaller or not there at all. So that's when, you know, this kind of realization came that actually it's not really about how many years you've got on the clock so much as what you're doing during those years, you know, how active you're being. And I'll just give you one example of, you know, weight gain is considered to be one of the, you know, sort of inevitable factors of aging. And generally you'd be looking at sort of 0.5 to 1 kilograms per year from middle age, you know, adding on that extra weight. But one study found in women who were runners, the difference in their weight from the ages of between 20 and 29 and 60 was 2 kilograms. So they gained, you know, on average 2 kilograms during that time. So some of them wouldn't have gained any at all. In comparison to non-runners, they gained 9 kilograms in that same time period. So you can see that the amount of change is much, much smaller over that same sort of time period. So it's a good example of how, yeah, these changes will still happen to a degree, but we can do a lot to slow them down by staying active.
How much do you need to run? Like, for people listening who maybe aren't, you know, running that much every week, is a park run once a week enough? Or, you know, is it running really regularly and kind of longer distances and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The consistency is important. I mean, it's not massive volumes. In terms of some of the really important changes that you can gain from being more active in terms of sort of prevention of declines, the studies are looking at about 30 to 40 minutes, 4 or 5 times a week. So it is quite a sort of regular habit that's needed in order to get these benefits. But it's not about, you know, doing huge mileages, big distances. And different benefits come from different types of sessions. So, you know, those sort of moderate intensity sessions, you know, you're kind of bread and butter, just easy runs. They're really good for, you know, preventing cardiovascular disease and keeping arteries really healthy. So keeping that elasticity in arteries, which is helping blood pump around the body and the brain in a sort of safe and efficient way. Controlling weight, reducing the risk of things like type 2 diabetes. But then there are some other benefits that come from slightly higher levels. So we've got these little kind of, every runner's heard of the mitochondria. We all know about the mitochondria. They're the little energy factories that we have in all of our muscle cells. And they start to decline as we get older. But this is one of the things that's been found, that we really can make a massive difference to mitochondrial health and efficiency through running, where we're just going at that slightly higher intensity level. So the sort of level where you could only maybe get out one or two words in conversation. So that's sort of what you might call lactate threshold or tempo level. So that seems to really help with that mitochondrial health, which is one of the things that's going to really help you maintain a decent performance level as you get older. And then in even higher sort of intensity, so really looking at maximal running, so sprinting, so short distances, that also has benefits that more moderate pace running doesn't have. And that, you know, we might come onto that when we talk about the things that running maybe can't do quite as well as we would hope it might.
So that maximal stuff, is that like we're talking proper, like, you know, 6 to 10 seconds of like flat out running, not just like intervals?
Yeah, that's right. We're talking about actual sprinting. It's really interesting, the studies that have been done on sprinters. So people who are just, you know, that they're masters athletes, they've been sprinters and they're now continuing with their sport, you know, in later life. And some of the differences that have been found in what they've managed to retain and hold on to as they've got older compared to us lot, the distance runners or the, you know, the endurance runners, things that we've, despite our you know, regularity, despite kind of keeping up our training, we actually haven't managed to hold on to. And the two key things that come into it here are bone density and muscle mass.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, I mean, till I researched this piece, you know, going back to my sort of, you know, sports science degree days and stuff, you know, we always were taught that bone density was really benefited by any weight-bearing activity, you know, so something like cycling or swimming wasn't that great because there wasn't any impact, but running or jumping, any of those things, that you were really going to get that benefit for, you know, your skeletal health. But it appears that it isn't quite so good news for us endurance runners. So the kind of stimulus that's required as we get older, because the cells that help us to maintain bone density become less responsive as we get older. And so the amount of load that you get through the skeleton through distance running isn't quite high enough to act as a stimulus for us to produce more bone cells that create that sort of denser structure. So sprinting, where the force is much, much higher, and also it's applied much more quickly, that does seem to be able to preserve bone density. So one study found 14% higher bone density in the hips of sprinters, and comparing endurance runners to people who don't exercise at all, there was like barely any difference, which is quite shocking.
Yeah, really. Got to get sprinting.
Yeah, that's right. So that's one thing we need to sort of put on the list as, you know, the kind of anti-aging formula for runners.
Nice. Yeah, it'd be a good book, that, wouldn't it? The anti-aging formula. I can see that.
Oh, I'm on it.
Oh, there you go. We'll review it, don't worry, straight away.
Well, the other thing is, sadly, the muscle mass. So that's another thing that, you know, we think we're doing ourselves a favour by, you know, getting out there, doing our 4 or 5 runs a week or whatever, that we're going to hold on to that muscle mass. But it appears that the declines are really not that different from somebody who's not actually exercising at all in terms of how much muscle mass we lose as we get older. And it's actually quite a scary amount. So 3 to 10% per decade from about the age of 30.
Wow. Oh, God. So
by the time you're 80, you know, it's a miracle you can even get up out the chair, let alone go for a run.
What if you've got very little to begin with, Sam? I'm just asking for a friend.
Well, I think the answer really lies in doing exercise with more force that's right. actually going to stimulate greater growth. So we're back to sprinting again, and also resistance training. So,
okay,
you know, I'm not a massive gym fan, it has to be said, but the benefits to your musculoskeletal system are site specific. So even if you're doing loads of squats and lunges and thinking, yeah, this is great, you know, I'm keeping my muscle mass and my bones strong in my legs, well, that's not going to help your spine or your wrists or, you know, bones in the upper body. So it's very you know, specific to the muscle groups that you're working. So really it means that we need to be working, you know, a full body workout in the gym or at home, but using resistance training equipment to try and hold on to as much muscle mass as possible, which in turn will help us hold on to a healthy metabolism and help to avoid that weight gain.
I've always held out the hope that I'd be fast as I got older. Like, look at Kipchoge, he's like 36, 37, I don't know. But like, is that not the case? Are we just going to get slower as we get older? Or is that kind of, I don't know, I'm depressed by this news.
Yeah, I mean, it is true that we will get slower as we get older. I mean, if you look at, you know, the famous, late and famous Ed Whitlock, you know, he was an amazing runner, you know, in his day. He ran a 17:23 5K when he was 67.
Wow.
At 75, he was still sub 20. He ran 19:07, so pretty nifty still at 75. At 85, he declined to 24:03. So still some people would be, you know, saying, oh yes please, 24:03.
Yeah.
But you can see that the declines are much steeper as the as you get older. But what we've got to remember is that we're starting from a much higher starting point. So although we're all going to lose fitness as we get older, if you haven't got very much to begin with, well, you're going to end up in trouble quite soon. Compared to somebody who's, you know, if you've got a VO2 max of, you know, 40 or 50, then yes, you're going to start to lose it, but you might end up with a VO2 max of, you know, 35 when you're 60, whereas somebody who had a VO2 max of 35 when they were 30, well, they're going to get to the point where, you know, they're going to be having mobility problems or, you know, heart problems, that kind of thing, because their VO2 max is going to be so much lower by the time they hit 60. So we hold it, you know, by kind of creating a bigger fitness level in the first place, we can afford to lose a bit more without getting into a situation where we're losing quality of life or, you know, risking our health with all these sort of lifestyle diseases.
So we're talking about, obviously, and we're talking to runners who've probably got, as you say, like a decent base. For those who don't have a decent base, though, I mean, what's the, is there, and they might listen and go like, oh, well, you know, I'm done. What's the point?
It's too late for me.
It's too late for me. But that's not the case, is it? I mean, if someone started to change their lifestyle now, I mean, they're going to... It's depending on their age, obviously, they could still make significant inroads into delaying that decline.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, that's one group of people who, you know, even somebody who's starting running at the age that we might sort of be generally seeing these declines start to happen. But if they've never done any running and they start running at 50 or even later, they're going to see the sort of adaptations that we all enjoyed long ago, because, you know, they're still got that capacity to adapt to exercise. You know, they're still presenting their body with the stimulus, and they are going to get adaptations. So that's really good news for people who are sort of later starters. There's still going to be a ceiling at which, you know, they're not going to be able to improve any further. But there's definitely, you know, there's no sort of age limit or deadline on you know, it being too late to start running, for sure.
I wonder, Sam, about the kind of the societal expectation of what people should be doing at certain ages. So maybe someone who can look around at when they're 30 and say, well, all my friends are exercising, so I will too. By the time they get to 60, 65, they might think, look around and think, actually, the expectation is that I'm going to do less now. What role do you think that plays in the age process of people, the idea that actually at certain ages you should be doing a certain amount of exercise?
Do you mean in terms of as people get older, people are more likely to sort of say, oh, you want to take it easy at your age,
exactly.
That kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really where, you know, running as a community is really, really helpful, because, you know, loads of running clubs or running groups and communities tend to be multi-generational. So you'll have runners of all different ages. And the key thing is that running is normal. It's a normal activity for everyone who goes to that group, everyone who's part of that community. And age doesn't really come into it. And I think that's really sort of healthy environment for people to be in as they're getting older. So, you know, they might have people at work who don't run or who aren't involved in that running lifestyle who are saying, oh, God, are you still running? And that's the thing. But if they've got that other side balancing that from people within their running community sort of saying, oh, you're going to be doing this race this year, or, you know, then I think that that kind of helps to give them the confidence to maintain their habit. And I think that's why you do get a lot of these masters athletes clubs and groups, because it just gives a little bit of solidarity. And there's a lot of the age grading thing, I think, has been a really, really good addition to our sort of forms of measurement that we like to give ourselves as runners. So Park Run, I think, is the main organisation we have to thank for sort of bringing age grading into the sort of wider world of running. And it's so helpful to sort of see yourself graded within the context of other people your age.
What about the brain, Sam? we've talked about our muscle mass diminishing slowly, but what about the grey matter? Obviously, this helps us in that department too?
Oh, it absolutely does. It really does. And actually, while, you know, with the muscle mass, you know, whether you're running or whether you're inactive or less active, you know, the declines are still quite evident. But with the brain, running does seem to be a little bit more of a robust factor in helping to prevent those declines. So for most of us as we age, the white matter of the brain, the hippocampus, actually starts to shrink. So we basically get smaller brains as we get older.
Oh no.
What if you're already starting with a very small brain, asking for a friend again?
It can actually make your brain bigger.
Oh. Wow.
That's a big brain, Rick. Not a big head, not big headed.
Yeah, actually, for your friend, this is obviously Ben I'm talking about now, but even in those who have already sort of seen some shrinkage of the brain tissue, that taking up exercise or increasing exercise can actually reverse that and actually help to sort of rebuild some of that hippocampus tissue. So it's about, you know, that's the part of the brain that deals with sort of learning and understanding, memory, that kind of thing. So all of those real kind of important functions. And you can create new cells in the hippocampus and also improve the connection between different cells in that area as well. So you're actually getting a few more hands on deck, but you're also improving the communication between all of those hands on deck. So it's really, really helping to stave off a cognitive decline. So that's really a great reason to keep running.
Yeah.
Is there any difference between males and females? I'm hoping that all the men are going to degenerate first. Is that like, oh, is there any difference? Oh,
thank you, Jane.
Well, it's a good question. That's not something that I really came across in the research. I mean, there are a couple of differences in terms of, I mean, women go through a lot of sort of accelerated changes through the menopause. So you do get, a more accelerated decline in bone density loss, and you tend to get, a bigger amount of weight gain over that period with a decline in metabolic rate. So not the news you wanted to hear.
No, gosh.
But again, studies have shown that women who are active throughout menopause, or even people who start to be active at that time, even if they weren't before, that they do weather that period better and do come out of it with less weight gain and fewer symptoms like the hot flushes and palpitations, that kind of thing. So it can be really, really good as a tool to help you kind of get through that difficult time as well.
Right, final question, Sam, and you've touched on this already, but I know the chances of injury increase as you get older. What are a couple of things that runners should be doing other than running to mitigate against this?
Well, I think it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but I think adding some sprinting is a really good way forward. You're going to have to add that quite, sensibly, cautiously. So we're not suddenly going to be doing huge volumes. And one of the best ways to introduce sprinting is to do uphill sprints, because there's a little bit less load, it's a little bit less sort of stressful on the hamstrings and the body in general, really. So I would start with a very sort of small number, so 5 or 6 reps, 8 to 10 seconds, up an incline. And you want to get to the point where you can do that up to sort of 12 seconds, maybe 8 reps, quite comfortably, before you then might start to maybe alternate between a hill and then a flat, and then a hill and then a flat, and then sort of gradually increase the number of flat sprints. Some other things, the resistance training really helps with tendons. Tendons tend to be one of the things that get injured a bit more in older athletes. Tendons like load, they like to be loaded, they don't like rest. So doing some good all-round resistance training exercises will help to increase that tendon strength. One of the areas that seems to decline really sort of significantly in terms of muscle and tendons is the calf Achilles complex. So I'll definitely focus on doing some calf work with a bit of load. And other things in terms of injury prevention. Well, cross-training is a good addition to anybody's training program. So just substituting some of your running for other cardiovascular exercise like swimming or cycling. So that can be really good in just kind of spreading the load a bit more. There tends to be fewer injuries among people who cross-train than people who are real sort of purists. And I know it's an old chestnut, but also it is about listening to your body. And, just trying, hopefully by the time we've reached these are more mature years, we've got the wisdom to decide whether we're being cautious for a sensible reason, or whether we're just being a bit lazy, or trying to find a way out of having to do that tough speed session. But sometimes I think you do reach a point where you can kind of use your intuition to sort of say, actually, I'm just not ready for that today, because something's a little bit niggly, or I'm just not quite recovered from the last time I did a hard session. And just really trying to sort of base your training around how you feel more rather than on what it says on this piece of paper that you you know, consider to be the gospel. I think, you know, I think we've reached that point where we should know more about ourselves than anybody outside, or, you know, what it says in a book or a magazine knows about us in terms of what training is right for us on that particular day.
Sam, thanks so much for coming on the podcast talking about running and aging. Your article is going to be out at the end of this month in Runner's World. So if people want to find out a little bit more, they can do so in the magazine. But thanks for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome. Good to speak to you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Sam Murphy, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Please just search Runner's World UK and click subscribe. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.